Polk County is consistently ranked as having among the highest rates of suburban poverty and food insecurity in the nation. Why? And what's being done to fight back? This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
I'm Robin Sussingham. We're taping Florida Matters in the beautiful Annie Pfeiffer Chapel on the campus of Florida Southern College in Lakeland. Polk County is a place of so many contradictions. It's the home of scenic lakes and charming downtowns, historic landmarks, and here at Florida Southern, the world's largest collection of Frank Lloyd Wright architecture. But this birthplace of several of Florida's governors was also named by one recent study as having the country's second largest percentage of people struggling to avoid hunger. We're going to talk to people who are on the front lines of this fight against hunger and deprivation about what they've learned, about what works and what doesn't, and we're going to take questions and comments from our audience. But first, nonprofits in Polk are taking some creative steps to alleviate hunger. For Florida Matters, reporter Julio Ochoa explains that some of the things they've learned are surprising.
The weekly produce market co-op at the Woodbrook Estates mobile home community in Lakeland is bustling. Boxes of fresh tomatoes, strawberries, lettuce, and other fruit and veggies sit atop rows of tables. Residents at the 55 and over community pick through the produce. They fill plastic bags and head to the cashier. Until a year ago, a group called Elder Point Ministries was giving out tons of free food to thousands of families in Polk County. But Director Jane Hammond says it didn't work.
We were just dumping food, canned goods and day-old bread.
And the food wasn't healthy.
All this food that at the end of the day, we were giving them boxes of high blood pressure and diabetes. And so we were persisting in the problem instead of overcoming the problem.
They found handing out food wasn't really helping, and a recent study backs that up. The Food Research and Action Center found that the Lakeland-Winter Haven metropolitan area had the second highest rate of food insecurity in the nation. The study is based on a Gallup survey that asked people if there were times in the past year when they had a food hardship. That is, was there a time when they didn't have enough money to buy the food they needed? In the Lakeland region, 23% of those responding said yes. The number is far higher than the national rate of 16%, and this rural and suburban region rated far higher than urban communities like Miami and Orlando. Brad Beatty is director of Heart for Winter Haven, a faith-based nonprofit. He says food insecurity can spawn health problems, including obesity and hypertension. That's why giving out healthy food is so important.
To really do this right, we're going to have to provide healthy sources of food for people because their quality of life is being impacted by this unhealthy choices.
Back at the Woodbrook Estates Mobile Home Park, Selma White wants to make sure the market will keep going during the slow summer months. She started coming in September and says she and her husband are eating healthier because of it.
There's nothing like fresh food, you know, fresh vegetables and fruit. So, yeah, we've got it made.
The fruits and vegetables she's buying aren't overripe donations. The food is restaurant quality, and much of it is from growers in Polk County. The extremely discounted price she and others pay will cover the cost of buying and delivering the food. Hammond says this market and 9 others they host are open to anyone. That takes away the stigma from those who are food insecure, and it also gives them a choice.
The seniors are more likely to want to participate if they get a say, they see the quality is really fresh. So they rather use their dollar for something that they know is good that they want than take free food that they have no control over.
Hammond says the market nearly supports itself because members are involved in selecting, sorting, and distributing the food. Brad Beatty from Heart for Winter Haven says he and other local leaders hope to expand on the concept by bringing a low-cost grocery store to Winter Haven. But Beatty knows the problem is bigger than just bringing food to people.
I think the biggest aha for me and for many people that remarked was that food alone would not solve this problem.
That's why He and others are engaging the community to develop other solutions. For Florida Matters, I'm Julio Ochoa in Lakeland.
Julio mentioned the study by the Food Research and Action Center, which found that the Lakeland-Winter Haven metropolitan area had a food hardship rate far higher than the national or statewide rate. Joining me to discuss this issue are Patty Strickland, Executive Director of Kids Pack, which provides food for students to take home from school. Whitney Fung, a doctoral student at USF's College of Public Health. Whitney was previously a county extension agent at the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences, IFAS. And Steve Turbeville, President and CEO of Lighthouse Ministries, a faith-based shelter in Lakeland that offers comprehensive services to the needy, but also distributes food boxes to area churches. Thank you all so much for being here. Whitney, let's start by talking about what we mean by food insecurity.
A lot of times people use the term food insecurity and hunger interchangeably, but we're trying to standardize a definition so we can all work towards the same goal. So the definition that's used by the U.S. Department of Agriculture really starts to encompass any period of time where individuals or families are limited in access to foods, or there's just a period of time where food is uncertain due to limited resources. So hunger is just that biological feeling of not having food, whereas food insecurity is that kind of that whole picture of why are we not able to provide foods or have foods at the table. And security includes that whole big picture, all the way starting from food production, distribution, processing to consumption, making sure that it's healthy, that we can afford it, as well as all the way to the end of food waste management. So that whole big picture of the community working together to achieve food security.
So Steve, in Julio's piece, Brad Beattie says, food alone will not solve this problem. What's been your experience?
That is so true. As we have seen individuals come to the ministry for help, hope does kind of begin with the meal, but when you look at the situation they're in, they come for different reasons. It could be situations in their own home, domestic violence, maybe addictive lifestyles. It could be economic, and a lot of times it is. It's just no fault of their own, no bad choices necessarily. They just had situations and circumstances that caused them to be in this kind of situation. But what we have found is if we take and we give them education opportunities, the job opportunities, if we find a way to take care of their children, along with helping them get the food they need and that sort of thing, we see them have confidence and then they can get their life together.
Well, Patty, we've got already free breakfast, free lunch, but that wasn't enough. Your organization, Kids Pack, decided to provide food for children to take home with them. What happens to a child when he or she is hungry? How does it affect their behavior, their performance in school?
The signs, both physical and mental, are largely based on whether they're hungry. They can't concentrate. They're always into the principal's office or either into the nurse's office with physical symptoms, tummy aches, headaches, all of those issues. The large portion of the children that we serve are homeless students, and there's 3,700 that are registered in the Pope County school system. So those are the majority of the students that we address by packing meals for them to take home on the weekend so that they actually have food to eat Saturday, Sunday, and coming back Monday to be fed by the school system.
And the definition of homeless now, just to be clear, is not what we used to think of as living under a bridge.
The definition of a homeless person is anyone who does not have a permanent address. It could be that they are living under a bridge. It could be that they're living in transitional housing. They're living with a relative. And I'll share a story with you because a lot of times people think if I move in with my relative, then I'm not really homeless. And there is a story that is shared by the school system because they do home visits to our homeless students. And what she found was she went to this very lovely home, you know, thinking, oh, wow, this is great for this family of four. The mother came to the door and she led them into the garage. She said there was just a mattress and all of their goods were stacked up against the wall. And what she said was, I'm sorry, I can't meet you in the living room. They had a time schedule. They could eat at a certain time. They could take food out of the refrigerator at a certain time. So even if I'm living with my mother-in-law, which they were, that was a pretty bad situation for them to be living in.
So, Whitney, that's children. What about adults? I know you mentioned something about the relationship between hunger and obesity, which is surprising.
When we see food insecure individuals, they are at a higher risk for having inadequate nutrition, a poor diet, leading to increased risk for chronic diseases like type 2 diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, things that are starting to skyrocket across the nation. You would not think that those that don't have food on the table will be obese. But in fact, there is that reality, and it's because they end up buying energy-dense foods or high-calorie with low nutrition. So they might end up eating fast foods or junk food or foods they can get at a corner store and eating a poor diet and end up with the chronic diseases.
We hear these high numbers for Polk County, for the Lakeland-Winter Haven metropolitan area. Why is that? We are not the Rust Belt. We didn't have coal mining jobs that went away or steel mills that went away. Things have gotten better since the recession. What's happened here that's causing this food insecurity? What are the factors that are contributing to this? Patty?
I think the biggest problem is that we're such a large county. And if you go into the lower part of our counties, we have a lot of food deserts, which means that there is an area that they're not accessible to healthy food because they have to drive like 30 to 35 minutes. And the only thing that may or may not be in their area is a 7-Eleven, which is where you're not going to get very healthy food. But we also have a lot of migrant workers that work in and out of, especially all around Polk County. We have a lot of unemployment in Polk County. So I think you have a lot of those diverse issues. But if you look at and start peeling back the onion of Polk County, Lakeland, Winter Haven, Bartow, you know, looks great. And then you start going further and further out is where you see a lot of the insecurities. They're sparse areas. There's lack of transportation for them to get to food areas where they could get healthy food. So I think there's a lot of issues in our county. And I think that's technically a lot of our issues. Is just the way our county is built.
So, Steve, do you think a lot of the problem that we're talking about with food insecurity is homegrown? Or do you think that the social services that we've developed in Lakeland and Polk County are doing such a good job that we're maybe bringing people in from other areas that are having a hard time?
That's an excellent question. I believe when you start talking to people how they come to Lakeland, it's not to come for assistance because there's good agencies here. It's relatives, it's friends, it's people that come because, hey, this is a sunshine state. And in reality, in point in time survey, we're about 40th out of 48 reporting counties as far as homeless go. That's through the Homeless Coalition. So I think it's more that we do have the agencies, but it's like agencies that shine light on a problem. And sometimes you can have the problem and it's invisible to everyone. And when that light is shined onto the problem, of course, we have a great community and people want to respond. And the network of agencies even represented in this room today is just a representation of the good work that we're doing. And what I would say, though, I would caution us all to not keep them to a place where they are victims. Let's move them from being victims to victors. Let's see them get to that place where they can have productivity and a life that God intended them to have.
Patty, I'm sure that you've seen a lot of things in your line of work, but there probably is a particular story, a particular child that stays in your mind and has stuck with you so that when people ask you, you know, why do you do what you do? Is there a story that you tell?
There's a lot of stories, but one of the most, one that moves me the most is the fact that we had a 9-year-old child that was receiving Kids Pack Meal. and actually came up and gave thanks. And he said to me, I've been three places to try to find a job so that I can support my mom and my brothers and sisters. And no one will hire me, and I don't understand why. And I was thinking, what a wonderful work ethic that this child has. But he also realizes that he needs to take care of his mom and his sisters also. And I know that we were helping him with food, but he was looking at the bigger picture of saying, okay, I'm taking this food and I'm going to share it with my family. That's one of the things that just moved me.
And there was no mention of a father in that story. And that was one thing I came across when I was doing research on this, was that according to the USDA report on household food security in the United States in 2015, there was a national food insecurity rate of 12.7%. For single mother families, that number was 30.3%. What can be done about that?
We do have a women and children's residential program, and that does capture some of the individuals. And what I will say is, if we can find a way to empower these ladies that are going through these difficult times, absent of a father figure or a husband in the home, it will make a great impact.
Whitney, what's the major factor that you see that's making it impossible for people to make ends meet?
We had a poverty simulation last year. Many of the people in the room actually attended that poverty simulation to try to answer that question. Poverty, food insecurity, these are things called wicked issues. There's not one simple answer, and that's why we need everybody coming together to collaborate to work. But when we talk about food insecurity and poverty, there are several things that do tie into not having the amount of income to buy those foods. And so high cost of housing, high cost of food, education, transportation, and healthcare. And so when you end up having only a limited amount of income, you end up having to pay for rent or utilities or transportation instead of food. So you give up the food and you pay for basic needs.
We're talking about the struggle to avoid hunger in Polk County. I'm Robin Sessingham, and you're listening to Florida Matters. We'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, and we're taping in front of a live audience at the Annie Pfeiffer Chapel on the campus of Florida Southern College in Lakeland. With us are Whitney Fung, a former Polk County Extension agent, Steve Turbeville of Lighthouse Ministries, and Patty Strickland of Kids Pack. And we're going to go to the audience now and take some of your questions and comments.
My name is Steve Knack. We came here to talk about food, but it's about money. Polk County is one of the fastest growing counties with industries, Amazon, UPS, Saddle Creek, but their wages are only $8, $12 an hour. How in the heck can you live on $9, $10, $12 an hour, and they don't even work you 40 hours, so you don't get the benefits of a full-time employee? So how can you afford food?
You're absolutely right in regard to the economic situation we have. You know, I don't think any of us could do this job if we didn't look at one person at a time, because you can't depend on government, you can't depend on the economy, you can't depend on too many things. But what I've seen work that restores dignity and restores that security is accomplishment, you know, whether it be education and whether it be vocational school or certification. But just steps, small steps. It's just one person at a time. It's really one community at a time.
And I wanted to add, too, this is something that I've been thinking about a lot. And with the poverty research, you know that employment is linked to, you know, increasing your factors for being in poverty and then thus food insecurity. So, yes, employment has something to do with it. Underemployment also has something to do with it, not having a full-time job, only having a part-time job. That leads to the working poor, also not able to afford foods. But in regards to minimum wage, there's a book, I think it was called something about Maximum Folly, something in their title. And they're saying that, yes, we can increase minimum wage, but then that increases employer expectations for jobs. So if I'm paying you $15 an hour working at McDonald's, then you are at a higher expectation level, a higher competition level, And thus, are we going to kick out and make even larger gap of those that are unskilled?
A lot of people can't get certifications and the training and the schooling to take off time from work to go to college, to go to a 32-hour. I could go get a class, get certified, but I got to take 3 days off of work.
Yes.
I cannot afford that to get better myself.
We have to do a better job communicating what's available. There are different kind of programs that sometimes by going to an employer and saying, hey, this is something that will help, and kind of a little bit of community pressure to get that employed. I mean, it's a movement, you know. But if we would just communicate what is already available, it will knock your socks off. But the problem is we're not taking you and doing that with you. We have to do that.
Brad Beattie with Heart for Winter Haven. Thank you, guys. There is one point of contention with that, though, Steve, I want to pull out, is we're focusing on what nonprofit charitable organizations could do to combat this wicked problem, right? And so that social component from one sector is addressing it as well as can be done. No argument there. However, there's two other components that we have to focus on. One is the business community. I know in Winter Haven, our Chamber of Commerce president attends the food insecurity co-op meetings that we have. Inviting the business community to the table for this is very important because we're talking about a poverty problem, an economic problem that really they're in such an important part of that. So getting the EDC here, getting the Chamber of Commerce is here to the table is important. The other part I just wanted to mention that Robin said about the social component of families is that this is a very much integrated into people who have moved here from elsewhere, whose social network is weak and they don't have a lot of social connections. So it's important for us to enhance those social connections for them. So I think part of that comes through the collaboration, but also through finding ways to connect people in community.
We had this poverty simulation last May, and that was kind of the point of it. We not only wanted those that are social services in the room, because we would just be preaching to the choir. Everybody's nodding our heads, and we all agree because we're in this work together. But we want businesses there, employers, government, elected officials. Even if you are a concerned citizen, we want you to be there. And so we had the first poverty simulation last May, and there was a follow-up meeting, and there is a interest in doing annual follow-up meetings. So I do encourage you to be involved in that conversation.
Donald Keene, former YMCA director, retired clergyman, marched many times with Martin Luther King. So I have a particular view of the ills of our society. And that's why I want to ask Steve the question. I think he put his finger on the number one problem, and that is sense of self-worth. I think where there is a faith-based community, they can be reasonably successful in helping people gain a sense of self-worth and dignity. But we live in a society which is far more secular than sacred. How can we translate the values that a group like yours tries to instill in people, is it possible to get the secular community to move people to the place where they have a sense of self-worth and dignity? Because if they have that, their chances of success, I am confident, are much greater.
Boy, you didn't throw a softball, did you? Let me just say that I do believe the dignity can be communicated both ways. Now, being a faith-based program, I find my dignity in Christ. But that doesn't mean that someone else will. And that's okay. I do think the other parts here, the education, I have a 56-year-old lady that received her high school diploma. And that restored dignity to her. That communicated to her family that she was taking responsibility for her life.
Patty?
I just want to make a statement that I think if you are determined to do the mission that we're called to do, and that is to work, as Steve said, one person, in my case, one child at a time, but preserving their dignity as we put them on the right path. I don't think anyone in this room has a job that does not put the dignity of the person first.
Hi, my name is Louis Carrillo, and I grew up in Polk County, and I've worked here all my life, and I hope to get old here, you know. But we live in a data-driven world. So in your research, is there an income that below is bad and above works? Because at some point in a problem that's overwhelming, you have to at least look at the facts, right? You know, is it 20,000? Is it 30,000? Is it 40,000 that separates the people who are getting hungry or not?
Yeah, so there's federal poverty level thresholds. Mm-hmm. And so for family of four, it's about 24,000. So if you're below poverty level, they don't say you're food insecure. It's actually
right.
two
That's
separate.
True,
yeah. Yeah, it's actually two separate things. A large population of that food insecure group are in poverty. So when you make less income, you are more likely to be food insecure, but it's not always the case. So you're right, we have to look at the income, but it's also looking at all those other factors. You know, are they a single mother? Do they have to pay for childcare? Do they have Medicaid? Do they have transportation? Do they have a free bus pass? Do they have resources in your community to supplement whatever it is? Did they know how to apply for food stamps? And I think that that just goes into the whole, why do we have this social service sector? It's because we have these additional supplements to help those that are in poverty to get out of poverty, those that don't have food to get food. And so we have social services like the Backpack Program, like Lighthouse Ministries, utility assistance, foster care. You know, you have all these nonprofits there to hopefully get people out of poverty and then moving in the right direction.
Food insecurity, it's an important topic and one that I'm sure we'll be following closely. Thank you so much to our panelists, Patty Strickland, Executive Director of KidsPAC, Whitney Fung, doctoral student at USF's College of Public Health, and Steve Turbeville, President and CEO of Lighthouse Ministries. Thank you all.
Thank you.
And thanks to all who participated in this evening's Q&A and to Florida Southern College for hosting us in the Annie Pfeiffer Chapel. You can find out more about food insecurity in Polk County and what's being done to fight back on our website, wusfnews.org. Just click on the Florida Matters tab and share your comments and questions with us by emailing us at floridamatters@wusf.org or tweeting @FloridaMatters. Our producer is Stephanie Colombini. Our engineer is Craig George. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Robin Sessingham. Thanks for listening.